better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
We are live. Welcome, folks, to a brand new week, episode 3,543. Today's episode, the top 10 real dangers of AI. I expect this will be an extremely highly populated live stream today, probably getting up over 300 people at least in the live. Probably going to be a huge download hit, a couple hundred thousand on the audio side of things. And why? People like fear and doom and gloom. The thing about this is there is some fear and gloom and doom potentially in this, and it is not what people normally think. I'm pretty sure some people showed up for this and didn't read anything in the intro that said what was going on for it, but we're not talking about somebody installing a traffic monitoring system in Phoenix, Arizona, and later on that resulting in robots traveling back through time to try to kill Sarah and John Connor. No. We're not talking about AI systems becoming sentient and coming out and waging war on humans or sticking us in a tube full of goo and making us into a battery for the Matrix or any of that stuff. None of the crap that you've read on science fiction novels or anything. We're talking about things that not only can happen, but already could happen. Some piece or part of them is highly probable, not just possible, in the near future, and some of them are absolutely inevitable. Some of them are somewhat reasonable to mitigate, and others may be almost impossible for us to mitigate or deal with. And even though it's the top 10, I threw in a number 11, and number 11 should scare the absolute shit out of you when you really think about the fact that it's also possible. It may be not as probable if I had to rank it in the top 10, and I basically have these except for the last one, the bonus one. I have them in order of probability. So when I go to the first one, the second one, I'm saying the first one is the least probable, but still probable. And when I get to number 10, that is the one that you can almost, almost guarantee is going to happen. And then the one that I'm using as a bonus, I would rank it about 4 or 5 if I didn't put it at the end just for the sake of putting it at the end. And I will give you a hint as to what the number 11 bonus one is, but it is the fourth turning in my research into that seminal work and the new book, which is called The Fourth Turning Is Here, that has me thinking this way. And as I said last week when I talked about the fourth turning, I think we might have broken what's known as the seculum. In the fourth turning, there's roughly 80-year periods they call seculums. And 80 years is about the expected length of a long human life and has been historically. And with that expectation, it's also affected how long people keep working and stay in power and things like that. And I think we broke it. I think our new seculum is 100 years, and maybe that means we have a fifth turning scenario. And some of the things that I've been reading in the fourth turning this last couple days has me thinking about some of the things I said last week, and it led to this horrific potential outcome. And when I first tell you what it is, you're going to be like, no, no one would ever do that. And I would say, if I told you 20 years ago that we would be arguing about whether or not a man who dresses like a woman should be able to compete in women's sports, you would have said, no, that will never happen. And how many other things in the last 20 years that you thought, no, that would never happen? And it happened, and humans were the problem. And see, I think the big problem we have with AI itself isn't what AI can do, but what people can do with AI. So we'll talk about that today. Before we do, let us go ahead and hear from our two sponsors of the day today. We're going to be talking about how technology can be used against you today and future looking at how technology can work against you, but technology can work against you right now. They're doing it right now. And every bit of data that they collect makes everything I'm going to tell you today even worse, because they can go back and use the data they have on you with the new technology. It's called data mining. They do it all the time. And you know who's the worst at selling and making your data available to others? It ain't the government. The government wants your data, but instead of collecting it, a lot of times they just buy it. Who do they buy it from? Number one source, internet service providers, and cell phone providers. You can do something about both of those. And that is, you can take back your digital sovereignty with a Start9 digital server. That will only do so much for your phone individually. But if you're accessing data through your own encrypted Start9 server, well, you see how that works, don't you? You should. If you don't, check out Start9.com today and all of the wonderful things you can do with a Start9 server. Password and file management, end-to-end encrypted messaging that is just absolutely unbreakable and more. And if you're not sure about whether or not Start9 is right for you, reach out to them. They'll be happy to help you make the right choice. And I will let you know that we will have actually a presentation on the full setup and implementation of a Start9 digital server at the fall workshop, done by expert council member Jesse Markowitz. And that should be great. And if you can't attend, of course, we tend to always stream those videos. And as long as there's no hangups with doing that this year, we will do what we always do and stream those videos for you for free on the Survival Podcast channel. Next up today, Fortress Canine. You know, training dogs is easy. Training humans, a little bit harder. We like to think for ourselves and decide, hey, that's not really what you should do. If you ask any good dog trainer, what is the most difficult species they work with, they'll tell you human beings. It's not like German Shepherds are easier than Malinois. It's, if you get the person right, the dog ends up right. Well, at canineacademy.us, you can learn all about how to train yourself to train your dog. There's a whole variety of courses that you have access to. I recommend you at least check out the problem-solving library. That'll help you through 4 or 5 of the most common problems that dog owners have, and let you see what taking a course at Canine Academy is like, so you can decide if the rest are right for you. And then I would at least consider moving on and taking the Canine Academy basics. You and your puppies will be happier for having done so. With that, let's get back to the main topic of today's show. And it is really kind of a horrifying thing when you start looking at what can be and what likely will be done with AI in the future, because this is what I'll tell you history has shown us. If your government can use something to further its goals and agenda, it will. If corporations can use something to further their agenda, they will. If political activists can use something to further their agenda, they will. In general, human beings, if they have access to something powerful that they can use to get what they want, they will use it. AI is now incredibly available. We all know about things like ChatGPT. Plenty of people are building their own AI systems, locally run AI systems. I was actually talking to Guy Swan about maybe working with us, now that we have the educational platform figured out, that maybe he should be doing courses on how to use all this technology, because he's the guy, man. The Guy Swan is the guy when it comes to Bitcoin nodes, AI, all this stuff. And, you know, I think that there's a lot of value in knowing how to use it. So even though I'm talking about dangers today, I am not expecting the danger to come from your computer will turn into a toaster and travel you through time. So when you sneeze on the dinosaurs, you alter history. That is the Treehouse of Horror from The Simpsons. But you get what I'm saying here. We're so obsessed with what we've been programmed, again, the word programming, when it comes to TV and movies, it's called programming for a reason. Programmed to believe by science fiction, movie production, the TV news, right? And manipulation is what we're talking about today, that we're missing the real problem. I mean, gun owners, responsible gunners, we have it down pat. When somebody says to us, well, we need gun safety, the gun is not the danger, the person with the gun is the danger. Gun violence, there's no such thing as gun violence. Guns are not violent. People with guns are violent. I understand that AI has a capacity to at least appear to think for itself, but it does what it's commanded and what it's programmed to do. Is there a possibility that someday we'll have something like a Star Trek's Data or even a Lore that will think for itself? Sure. But what do we know is going to happen? What do we know will happen? We know people will use whatever they can to further their agendas. They will use whatever power they can get their hands on to further their agendas. So we have a possible issue long term with AI becoming too sentient and maybe us losing control of it some way. But we also have a guaranteed reality that what AI can already do, and the things that we know AI will be able to do even better in the next year, two, three, four, five, okay, will be used by humans against other humans. That's not a maybe. That's not a possibly. That's a definite. I'm not saying everything I'm going to lay out today, including some of my assertions or interpretations or prognostications about how that could look over the next 5 years, are all going to happen the way I say. But I'm going to tell you right now, every one of them will be done to at least a degree. Every single one of them. There is not one of them that will not, including the scary ass 11th one, that won't affect you in your lifetime unless you, you know, take a dirt nap in less than 10 years. I promise you that some level of them will occur. And I advocate using AI in spite of all this. And the reason is, number one, if my enemy has a weapon, I want an equal or better weapon. And if I can't get equal or better, I want the best I can get, right? So the same reason we say that we own firearms, one of them is to defend our rights and liberty. Now, we do not have the equivalent weaponry to the United States government, but we're not going to be like, oh, that black rifle looks like something the military uses. I don't want to touch it because the government has it. It's nonsense. And if you're one of these people that spouts this crap about AI being a demon or some other bullshit today, I don't have time to talk to you. And the reason I don't have time to talk to you is I don't have time to talk to crazy people anymore. I don't. Right? It's a demon. I've heard so many crazy ass things. The AI that we're talking about right now, this minute, that people have access to, falls into basically two types of AI. We have what are known as LLMs, or large language models. And these are just really sophisticated computer database systems where the computer takes the question conversationally and regurgitates an answer conversationally. That's really all they are. And then we have what I would call media production and manipulation AI. These are things like DALL-E or Midjourney that produce images and videos, or technologies that allow us to take something like this video and tell an AI to go, hey, pick out the 15 best 2-minute segments for me to use and republish, which is a useful tool. But what's starting to happen now, and ChatGPT has this, is the merger of these things where you can tell ChatGPT what you want and it tells DALL-E what to produce, okay? And there's some limits with that. I don't always get good results using it, but it is beginning to coalesce and mesh together. And instead of trying to figure out what command do I need to give this media production tool, I let another AI talk to another AI to figure that out for me. And I can talk to the first AI like I'm talking to a person and fine-tune what I'm looking for. It's not perfect yet, but it works pretty well. I recommend using these tools again because our enemies are going to use these tools. And because our competitors in any business that we're in or any educational path we're on are going to use these tools. And if we don't, we will be left behind. We will be left behind. And using these tools is not the danger. It's what other people use the tools to do that is the danger. And the more you know about them, the more you will likely be able to comprehend when they're being used on you. The dangerous thing, and the thing that made me think this way today, and we're going to hit on some of the stuff that this would entail, is some of the things people are doing just to make a point right now. So I watched an AI video derived montage today, and I won't make you watch it because it's pretty gross, even though it's not gross the way you might have just thought in your head. It's just, so it was Kamala Harris and Donald Trump, and they were like making out. I'm talking like deep level French kissing. And yeah, it was gross. And The reason you would have immediately said that's AI is that the scenario you were seeing was so ridiculous that it didn't make any sense. And they also had Kamala looking about 15 years younger than she is in it. And so that would have tipped you off. But if it wasn't a completely ridiculous scenario, that particular part of the montage was incredibly well done. There was very little of the telltale signatures that this is an AI-derived image in it. Later in the montage, as it went away from that, thankfully, like Kamala holding a baby Trump, you could see the signatures. And I think the person that made it may have been smart enough to realize, like, I want to show stuff that, you know, is where everybody goes, oh, that's AI. And then people go, well, that has to be AI because that didn't happen. But boy, that looks real. We're going to get to the point where you literally will not be able to tell. I think we'll have a period of time where we might have analysis tools that can tell us that it's fake, But unless you have that tool, you will not be able to look at it and discern it on your own that it's fake. And it won't just be quiet videos like that one, or you know, music in the background or whatever. It will be the person talking, using their exact voice, inflection, etc. We already have tools that do all this stuff. They just don't do it well enough to fool somebody with an IQ over like 95 right now. But understand, before I go into this list, how many times we have had a news story break that was fake. And I'm not even really blaming fake news, even though there's plenty of that yet. I mean, like, it was never even on the news. It wasn't on CNN. It wasn't part of the actual news cycle. Somebody created a fictitious thing, made up a story like J.D. Vance had sex with a latex glove stuck between two couch cushions. All right? Somebody made a fake page from his book, Hillbilly whatever, you know, and wrote that into it and made a fake page and published it. You still have people spouting it. It's been widely discredited. And then somebody did the same thing with Tim Walz, saying he drank so much horse semen on a bet that he had to have his stomach pumped. Also didn't happen. And there's people right now that will look you straight in the eye and scream and yell and holler that you're a liar when you say it never happened, even though it never happened. So the fact that even once we get more sophisticated and it's difficult or impossible to tell just by looking, even when we have analysis tools that you can drop the media and it immediately says generated by AI, do you think people still won't believe it, regurgitate and use it? See, the danger isn't the AI as much as it is what the people who want to control you will do with it. So let's start going through the top 10 dangers posed by AI in the hands of other humans that are not just possible, but in my opinion, probable. The only question will be how much will be done with them, starting from the least likely to go full scale, going to the most likely. So number one is autonomous weaponry. And I actually think that is going to happen, but maybe not so much in the way that I'm about to lay out as it being dangerous. So I want you to think about something that's kind of old school, that really is kind of old school in the world of weapons, the C-130, the AC-130 Spectre, or spooky gunship, right? These things have been around so long. They were around before I was born. They were around when I was serving in the Army myself, even though I have no direct experience with them, just knowledge thereof. And they're still around today. And they've continuously been upgraded, and they are the most devastating forms of air cover, close air support, that's ever been developed. If you don't know what an AC-130 is, it is a modified cargo plane. The C-130 is a cargo plane, four props, big wide-bodied plane, and you know, transporting weaponry, tools, cargo, soldiers. I used to jump out of those in the United States Army Airborne. Again, they've been around forever. I've been on the little brother of it, the one, the C-120 or C-125, whatever they are. The smaller one with just the two props taking off of a dirt airstrip in Honduras, where the pilot, like power brake the hell. It felt like the wings were going to come off so he could get off the ground in time on this dirt airstrip. So again, not anything new. And someone from our, I can't remember what that's called now. One of our other streaming platforms that just won't come to me right now says Puff the Magic Dragon. Yeah, that was a version or a name for this particular tech. What if you know what that tech does, it's pretty scary in its own right. It's basically this entire giant cargo plane is loaded with nothing but munitions and weapons that are all sticking out one side of the plane. So the plane flies in a circle, let's say a 1 mile circle, and it can put about one round per square meter in that circle really fast. It looks like Star Trek when these things light up. Well, it's close air support. So how do you not kill your friendlies? Well, I don't remember exactly what the method was, again, because I didn't actually work with or do anything with these gunships. But all soldiers were told about them and how they worked in case we ever were in a situation where we might have to. And I'm going to read because I know things have changed. Back then, there was something you put on your helmets. I don't remember what exactly because, again, we never had to do it. But we were told that so that they would know where you are and not kill you, basically. But here's how they phrase this today. U.S. Air Force phrases this today. These heavily armed aircraft incorporate side-firing weapons integrated with sophisticated sensor navigation fire control systems to provide surgical firepower or area saturation during extended loitering periods. That means that they fly real slow in a circle and they can keep pounding the shit out of stuff. Day or night and in adverse weather. The sensor suite consists of multispectral television sensors, high-definition infrared sensors, and radar. These sensors allow the gunship to visually or electronically identify friendly ground forces and targets anytime, anywhere. What that means is they can fly this thing over and light the shit up out of the enemy. And Andrew is saying IR beacon. IR beacon is exactly what it was back then. You're correct. I just couldn't remember. And Twitch was the platform I was trying to think of, where we also have someone there telling us IR beacons. Yeah, they were IR beacons. I think they're using more advanced tech today. My point is that even in the 1990s, we had tech that would allow an aircraft just unleashing god-awful hell to know, don't shoot here. Shoot here. Well, we can now program drones and say, if this identify humans, and if this human has a thing, kill it. Or if this human doesn't have a thing, kill it. It will have no fear, and it will act mercilessly, and it will track down soldiers or people or dissidents or anybody that you don't like and kill them. This is going to get in the hands not just of governments who will do the worst with it, but terrorists who will do horrible things with it. It is very possible. You can train these AI tools to say, if you see a vehicle that looks like one of these 10 vehicles, blow it up. If you see a vehicle that looks like one of these 10 vehicles, leave it alone. There's 100 different combinations that can be if this, then that programmed into these things. Right now, most of us who have paid attention to what's going on in Ukraine have seen videos of both Ukrainian soldiers and Russian soldiers being killed by these little drones, a few hundred dollars. We're not talking about the big ones that are taking out like tanks. And seeing this person like run from and try to hide and eventually this thing get them, those right now are all still being controlled by somebody with basically video game controls. That's going to go away. Imagine having a battle and having the ability to program a swarm of 100,000 drones to kill enemy, destroy vehicles and personnel. Or you can take it from there. How many things could be done with this? What you have, though, is a problem is lethal and precise decisions, eventually with no human oversight. I think the first generation of these weapons will have somebody sitting there monitoring multiple drones and having like an abort option. But eventually it might be decided that the computer can make the decision much faster. And even if we accidentally kill somebody, right, we'll always have recall. And sometimes technology fails. So I think this is a highly probable one, but I think it's actual risk to us individually or as a society as a whole is somewhat limited for now. I think the bigger risk is when it gets in the hands of terrorists, and it will, and when it gets used by terrorists, and it will, what do they always do to us? When we get attacked by terrorists, whose rights and freedoms do they attack? The terrorists or the people of the country that they're supposedly protecting? You know the answer to that. Go look at the Patriot Act and what it did and how little it actually did to affect terrorism and how much of an intrusion into the life of Americans it is. Go look at the Freedom Act. All you got to do to know what a piece of government legislation does, read the title of it and assume it does the opposite. So the Patriot Act was the non-patriotic act. The Freedom Act was the slavery act, right? The Inflation Reduction Act was the Inflation Increasement Act. We all know this. So my biggest concern with this one for the time being, when the rudimentary first generation of these gets in the hands of terrorists, they're going to do something like send it to a concert and pick out a certain class of people and have like 20 of them go just find and annihilate any random 20 people that fit that class. Something like that will happen. And it will be used against us to tell us we shouldn't have access to things or freedoms because we need to be protected from ourselves. So that's the first one, and it gets worse from here. Next up is still, you know, not so bad, and, you know, we'll figure out a way around it, I guess, in time, but intellectual property theft. AI is going to make it very easy to analyze and replicate and produce things that others claim rights and ownership to. This can actually be liberating in some ways. I think we have taken IPR way too far, where we'll allow someone to own an idea for 20 years or more. I mean, the other side of it is I get why they do it, right? If we didn't have some value in that I created a thing and I have the ability to now profit from the thing for a period of time, and if I didn't have that, then my incentive to create things goes down. I get that argument. I really do. But I think it's been oversold and overused. I think that maybe sometimes things that are considered ideas, you know, 10 people have the idea all at the same time, and whoever fills out the paperwork first gets ownership of it. But we could end up in a place where the corporations are completely destroyed with this, would be one example. Creative destruction, I guess, is the way to look at it. So think of what happened to the music industry. Now, it's still around, but it doesn't have anywhere near the power that it did with technologies like LimeWire and Napster and stuff like that. Like, it used to be, if you wanted an album, you had to pay, what, $15 in like 1990s money to get a DVD or a CD, right? Today, you can listen to any music you want all the time for free. I know there's still subscription services people pay for and things like that, but let's be honest. There's not a song you want to listen to is not on YouTube. Not a song. And you can go listen to that song, and if you want the music, you can rip out an MP3 of that song and put it anywhere you want and listen to it anytime you want. And there's nothing anybody can do about it. And so the music industry had to adapt, right? It had to adapt. But we could get to a point where some industries that are attacked by this, like, it literally just destroys the entire company. They're just gone. Because you'll be able to take something like a patent, just put it into AI, and the AI will be able to reverse engineer the technology by reading the patent. That's just one example. Or if you can get your hands on blueprints and things. And if then we start implementing other components of AI that we'll cover in a bit, like automating hacking techniques so that we can hack into a company's database, acquire their product information, reverse engineer it, and reproduce it. This all can be done right now. But the ease of doing it, the speed of doing it, and access to the technology to do it will only increase from here. How about AI and political campaigns? Like Kamala and Trump making out. That's not very valuable. Because it's so outlandish that nobody will believe it. But what if somebody finally finds a kind of grainy video being shot from like below the waist level, audio recording of Trump actually saying something like all of the soldiers buried on the D-Day battlefield graveyard were suckers? Right. I don't believe that happened, but that's a story and plenty of people do. But how do you swing an election? I always tell you this. It's the 5% of the mushy middle. And it's really right now in modern times, the past like five elections, it's 5% of the people in about seven states. That's all you have to move. Those people move on emotion. If you can produce that, it's quite even in the world of AI. Isn't that kind of believable to a lot of people? It would be like, yeah, that right. Kamala Harris holding baby Donald Trump that looks like adult Donald Trump shrunk down into a baby like from the Boss Baby movie from Disney? No. But a well-pulled-off thing, and this could be done to any politician. Kamala Harris reciting verses from the Communist Manifesto to a law class that she was in or something as a report? All of this can be produced now. And there are little telltales. But it's getting better. Like, if you look at the first AI-generated media from, let's say, 2 years ago to today, it's a night and day difference. Give it another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. It is very possible that we're going to enter a world where you won't be able to trust anything. I mentioned Guy Swan, and he talked about this web of trust and how Nostr's expanding that and how you won't be fooled by AI because you'll know that the person's real because of their reputation and time. It'll cost money. So what? It won't cost much money. I'm telling you right now, there are people using AI for simp farming. You know what simp farming is? Simp farming is you guys that sit there and ogled girls on Instagram and OnlyFans and shit, and you're like the guy that thinks a stripper really likes them, and then like give them money through the screen. And there are entire simp farming accounts that there is no woman. There's no woman at all. Doesn't exist. Some of them you can even tell real easy, and the simps don't even care. If they can do that, though, they will be able to take what you know about a public personality and put something in that's plausible and destroy people with it. They will, and they're already doing it, I believe. And what we've already talked about is that people will believe what they want to believe even when it's proven false. How many people really believe that Trump called Nazis very fine people? Never happened. Even Snopes says it doesn't happen, but yet I still see journalists doing it. I saw a journalist get called out on it last week, somebody on Fox News, and they said, oh, he was talking. No, he said that, but he was talking to the Proud Boys. The Proud Boys didn't even come on the scene until like a year later. But this is a journalist, and you could tell she really believed it. She wasn't just lying. She really believed it. So if you can get that done, when all you did was selectively grab a piece. What Karine Jean-Pierre called the cheap fake, right, trying to defend Biden, it actually is a thing, and it does work. But wait, there's more. There will be more. It will continue. How about AI-driven cyber attacks? Yeah? Right now, the most common form of a cyber attack, like what they did to X with when the Elon Musk and Donald Trump Spaces thing happened and they basically shut it. It took them like 30 to 45 minutes to get it working so they could go ahead with it. They got delayed because they were attacked. It's what's called a DDoS attack. In a way, that's kind of already sort of like AI, because what you do with that is you put out some sort of virus, malware shit, and you get it on your computer, and you don't even know you have it. And it doesn't even really do anything to you directly. But at any given time, the hacker, who is the master of all of these computers that he's now made basically his bitch slaves, can point all those computers at a single place at the same time and attack that way. Now, as robust as Twitter's architecture is for things like that, I think that was a nation-state attack. I don't think it was your random hacker. But that's sort of kind of AI, because basically you're making a bunch of computers do a human function. If you overload a server, it can't handle that much, and it kind of basically shuts down, and then nobody can use it. That's a DDoS. Imagine you create an AI that specifically searches for computers to take over and soft targets to hit. That's just one example. With AI, learning programming and code and being used to recognize weaknesses, and we literally have good guys, I guess would be the term for it, that are developing AI to look at a system and identify vulnerabilities so those vulnerabilities can be fixed before they become capitalized on. Do you think that's where it's going to stop? Do you not think we're going to have AI? I'm sure we already have AI tools doing this, but on a much larger level. Instead of just having 20 guys in hoodies, you know, slumped over the way you think it looks like because the TV told you it did, you know, instead of a whole bunch of really high-end people working for the government of the United States or China or Taiwan or whoever else in a very shiny room that have high-paying government jobs, imagine having 100 computers that are each 100 times better than the individual hacker, or more, having the hacker partnered with the hacking AI. And then think about how stupid we are. Think about how stupid we are that we can have entire companies' missions shut down with one worm that gets in. You have a company that runs the software, for instance, for doctors and dental offices that recently had almost none of them functioning. We've had gas companies shut down, but the only thing they really attacked was their billing. But they couldn't function without their billing working because, God forbid, somebody gets some free gas. You understand what I'm saying here? Like, what they're going to be able to do with this boggles the mind. Right now, there are hackers who have demonstrated that you can get inside the computer system for an electrical power plant and tell it to overload itself and make it happen. Imagine what happens when that gets in the hand of people who just want, like, no oil or think energy's bad. Like those crazy people that throw paint on paintings and monuments and sit in the middle of highways. Right now they're just an annoying pain in the ass, a little protected class of spoiled little rich fucks who never get their head cracked the way that you would if you did anything half as illegal as what they're doing. Like, you would get the shit beat out of you, your teeth kicked in, tased, bitten by a dog, sprayed with mace, and thrown in jail, and they get, bad boy, move along. Imagine when those people get their hands on this, and they will. What will they target? This is way more concerning to me than the computer deciding to try to kill me. It's the human deciding to use the computer to kill me that I'm actually concerned about. How about just AI-enhanced propaganda? The ability to fast, mass-produce propaganda to manipulate public opinion, but it's worse than that. So we can use all sorts of AI-derived media to sway public opinion. We can also use AI to decide the things that are actually true that will be most impactful at furthering a specific agenda. But there's more. And this is where it gets really scary when you think about the implications of it. Every decision that any entity ever makes is a data-driven decision. Sometimes the data is faulty, sometimes the decision maker is a moron. But it's all still data-driven. No matter how stupid they look, they thought they were doing the right thing or they wouldn't have done it. And when I say right, I don't mean ethically right or morally right. I mean, they believed what they were doing was going to work for their agenda or they wouldn't have done it, and they based that on something, data. We have data on fucking everybody and everything now, okay? We have more data than there's ever been in history, and it is amazing what somebody, just like my old profession, a marketing analyst would be able to do for me when I was director of internet marketing for Sage Telecom. I was like, I want to email our customer base and sell this new internet access that we have. And they said, we have over 1 million customers. And I'm like, I don't want to email 1 million customers. I don't want to email anybody that already has it. And I don't want to email anybody that can't get it. But that's not good enough. I would actually like to know, like, the 50,000 best people to email based on the data we have about them that will convert for us. And we gave it to a guy. He had to be a 22-year-old kid right out of college. He was a marketing analyst. He data ranked it, and we hit something like 22% sign-up rate on a single email over the next 30 days after that email went out of people that we emailed signing up for the internet access product we have. And he ranked that out of 1 million. That would have been 2004 or 5. Ish, somewhere in that range. I think things are a little bit more advanced than they were back then. He was using an Excel spreadsheet, basically, and some macros he developed to do that. Think what AI will do with all this data that we've collected since then. As far as determining not just how to manipulate the problem, what is the pain point? Where is the area that we can hit? Like, I want result A. Find me the pressure points. It would be termed differently, but find me the places to push to get to result A. So that the propaganda machine wouldn't just be about, here's the best propaganda we can make for this thing, but actually determine what propaganda to produce for what desired result. To be able to data rank things like social media interactions, the current mood of society, the current demographic with the most influence on action A and the demographic with action B, and determining what both of them need to hear or see before you even start developing the propaganda. What you're talking about is propaganda on steroids. We're going to have propaganda on a level that is hard to even fathom at this point in human history because we've never had anything quite as effective. And yet the propaganda we have had has been exceptionally effective, and I'm not going to get into it, but let's just please don't drag religion into this. This isn't about demons inside your computer. It really isn't, those of you that have to go there. But we're going to have incredibly good enhanced propaganda. And I'm not even talking about deepfakes, because that's next. This is determination of the propaganda, the pain point. When you learn certain self-defense techniques, you learn that if I push on this point of a human body, that I'm going to get a certain response from most people most of the time. It won't. Nothing is a foolproof. It's amazing what a person on certain drugs can endure. But in general, there are certain places if you push, you're going to get the person to lower their head a little bit. If you know that, you can follow that up with a strike. Imagine somebody being able to use computers to find those pressure points, those impact points on society as a whole to manipulate it in the direction that they want to move society. This is exactly what the Chinese are doing with TikTok, by the way. I'm just saying it's going to get better and better and better and better. You'll be able to take the data that comes in from these platforms and use it to program and develop the template to get what you want to come out the other side. So the same tool they're using to manipulate you will be giving them the data to know how to manipulate you and giving them the speed at which to implement that propaganda at a higher rate faster than ever before. Part of that, but its own thing, will be deep fakes and disinformation, which is creating that false data, that false information to any end. We already talked about how it could be implemented in political campaigns and things like that, but there's a lot of things you might want to do here. Let's talk about something that really happened recently. And who actually I think it's always important, and I'm not saying the person that benefits the most from a thing did it. I'm saying it's always like you should look at life as a police detective. And a police detective, when they see a crime, will look at who had motive. And sometimes a person with motive didn't do it. So I'm not saying the story I'm about to tell you that is a new recent story is an example of this. I'm just saying it could be. You guys know your Social Security data is gone. Like somebody has it. It was hacked. Pretty much every living human being had their Social Security number and their matching name to it stolen recently. It was initially blamed on the government itself, our government, and I'm all for blaming the government. It turned out it was an agency that works with the credit agencies, so the credit agencies can check your credit. And the data was not encrypted. They literally had the Social Security number of everybody in America, their name and number, and probably their date of birth, which is most of what you need for identity theft, and did not effing encrypt it. Now, who would do that? Identity thieves. Yeah, punk, yeah. The dark web hackers, right? Like, there's a lot of people that you would think of first, but who would benefit the most from this economically? The United States government. No, the United States government really doesn't directly benefit from this. I can think of ways they could manipulate it to use it to control us, to come up with a second level of identification that we have to sign up for, so it has to go with our Social Security code since that was already compromised. That would be a way, and maybe. But what company can you think of, major brand that advertises like crazy, who would most benefit from your fear that your Social Security number's on the dark web? That would be LifeLock. I'm not saying they did it. I'm saying just my first thought was, boy, that's pretty beneficial to LifeLock. Like, you could see where maybe they might even have done it and didn't do anything with the data at all. Just hacked it and did it in such a way that it would be noticed that it was hacked and in such a way that you can't hide that it happened and then let things just happen. I bet you LifeLock, I bet their sales have gone through the roof in the past week. Anybody want to take the other side of that bet? That LifeLock's numbers won't look better this quarter than they have in a long time? Okay, again, I'm not saying that it happened that way. I'm not saying it. I'm just saying it could have. Okay, now I want you to go forward 5 years in time where mass access to this type of technology exists and you're a company. Can you think of any way that companies could use things like this to their advantage other than the one I just gave you? I think there's a lot of them. And so what I'm saying is there's an incredible incentive here for corporate espionage, not just stealing information so you can use it against your competitor, but you can steal something or hack something that influences purchasing decisions en masse. That's just one example. And I don't really know what the context is, but Hayes Review says, but they can't fake old books. Yeah, we can fake old books. Sure we can. There's a whole business in forging. Now maybe you're saying AI can't forge old books. I'm wondering, long term, if AI might not become the best forger's tool ever invented. Because you could look up things like, how do I age this? Where do I get material that even if it's tested would test as being this old? So I forge it on the right thing, et cetera. So that could possibly be something. Now, 229 Mick, now you're thinking those car warranty people are going to think something up for this. I agree. I think that's very possible. I'm sure that they could, you know, leak information that's actually true because they hacked in to get it about a certain flaw in a certain car that's not going to create a recall, but it may make you more worried if you own that car that you need an extended warranty. I guarantee you that's a thing. And who? Doesn't matter who. All that matters is that. So I think there's a whole bunch of opportunity here to use deep fakes and disinformation from a corporate to corporate standpoint, corporate on corporate disinformation. How about creating disinformation or a deep fake that makes Apple look really bad? Well, if you were Android, you might want to do that, or the other way around. Any place where you have a big two or a big three, think about the potential there. You don't think people will do it? Think about, let's say that the people that ran PepsiCo and Coca-Cola Company were completely ethical. They got rid of high fructose corn syrup and these toxic fake sweeteners, right? They go to nothing but stevia or real sugar, yeah? They become the most ethical Boy Scout-like, Eagle Scout-like freaking saints known to man. You still don't think that maybe somebody who's a stock trader wouldn't want to create a deep fake that made one company look like it was about to go astronomically high in profit and another one that made a company look like it was about to go under? You see what I'm saying? Like, these deep fakes are not just about making you believe that Kamala Harris and Donald Trump had sex, right? It's not like people are doing stuff like that to goof around and also to make a point. But if you start to open up your mind to what you could do, if you have to do something that's very hard for decent people to do, you have to think like a criminal. And if you start thinking like a criminal, and not necessarily the criminal that's going to run out in the street, knock an old lady over by breaking her kneecap and stealing her wedding ring, but you start thinking like a criminal, like a God-level criminal that wants to steal billions of dollars, like the oligarchy we have, like the investment banking scammers that we have, what can they do with this tech? And how much disruption does that cause to the real economy? It's massive. Then we have AI-powered surveillance. And this is what will enable the social credit score that they have already in China look like a joke. Imagine being able to go nowhere without your data being tracked as to where you are, how you got there, when you were there, and what you did, and what people thought of you. If you've never seen the Black Mirror episode about the social credit scores, you should really look it up and watch it. It starts out, there's this really pretty blonde girl, and she's like a, you know, super high-rated person, and by the end of the episode, she's like to the level of living under an overpass because she said the wrong thing to the wrong person at the wrong time, and it starts this whole cascade of falling further and further and further down. And this has impacts like who you can be friends with, who will be your friends, where you can live, how you travel, what you can buy. Doesn't matter if you have money. If you don't have the social credit to go along with it, you can't get on the train or you can't buy this car. You have to buy the shitty car. You can't live in these houses. You can't live in these apartments. China's already doing this shit. Nosedive is the episode. Hey, Reviews says he's correct. I think that sounds right anyway. But imagine having the ability for all this surveillance that we already have to be intelligent surveillance. So right now, surveillance isn't as good as you think it is. If they know James, who's here in the live chat, right? If James is targeted, the surveillance of things like traffic cameras and stuff like that is very, very good. And if we get a warrant, legit or illegit, doesn't matter, any signed off warrant, or if somebody in an organization decides they don't care about having a warrant because there's plenty of ways to do it without a warrant by law enforcement and government officials, and they say, we're going to track his phone, and he takes his phone everywhere he goes, the surveillance on James is incredible. But finding James, if we don't already know who James is, through that surveillance is pretty defunct. It's not very good yet. Imagine if every camera that picked up every person was using intelligence to analyze, is this person doing something wrong? There was a TV show about this. They called it The Machine. I can't remember what the show was called now, but it was good, and it like was one of those shows that like, man, I don't want to watch this because I can tell that they're going to ruin it, and they did. And I can't remember what it was called though, but you know, it was this guy that was like a military operative, and they built the machine, and the machine could predict crimes. And they ended up deciding they only needed the machine. The government decided they only needed the machine to tell them about really big deal things. And they left the common man who was going to get killed or something alone. And the guy that built the machine and this guy that he hooked up with, who he didn't know built the machine when he first hooked up with him, went out and took those numbers, which were like Social Security numbers, and said, this person's at risk. And they didn't know what. They just knew that something was going to happen. So the movie Enemy of the State is not what I'm talking about, though. It was a TV show. And I think it went quite a few seasons, but I just can't remember what it was called. But it was clearly a TV show that was designed to convince you that the deep state was a good thing and it was looking out for you. But we're going to be able to have that type of surveillance available to just about anybody. And even if you don't have the surveillance available, if you have the AI capable of hacking the people who have the surveillance and gaining access to the data, then you can use your own AI to develop your own solutions to your own problems. Person of interest, that's it. Scott and Tom both got it. That was the show. And it was a great show, Tom's right. And then it just kind of dwindled, and I lost interest over time in Person of Interest. Totally unrelated to our discussion today. If you're looking for a good show to watch with no woke bullshit in it, Dorothy and I are watching a TV show right now called White Collar. It was made in the early 2000s. And we determined that if you want to find TV shows without woke bullshit, you got to look for TV shows where nobody has a smartphone. Once the smartphone shows up, stupid content follows very quickly. That's about the delineation point where all the woke shit started coming into every show, including the shows that started out without it, and then they pushed it in and it got insane, right? That's not what was the problem with Person of Interest. But we're going to have like massive capabilities with AI-powered surveillance, and it's not just governments you need to worry about. Who wants your information? Who wants your information? Everybody. Levi Strauss wants your information. They want to know if you're a Levi Strauss jean wearer or do you wear Wranglers. Either way, you're a prospect for their marketing. And it's down to that level of granularity that we'll be able to do. Because one of the things that's really cool about AI, if you're the one doing it, is that you can build your own AI tools now. You can build your own AI machines. You can get a really good gaming computer and basically run an LLM on it. Now, you're not going to run ChatGPT on that, but you can train it to do like a niche thing. Like I've said, a great project might be a bunch of herpetologists get together and train an AI unit that they run themselves on their own computing equipment, you know, on herpetology. And all the information there's available on herpetology would be an example. Well, you could have a corporation do a little bit better than that, couldn't you? Find and target all the people that we can sell X to. And then show those people what we want them to see, both good and bad. Then let the government get a hold of it, because don't ever forget, that is the ultimate problem. But this is going to be pervasive. It's going to be everywhere. And then we have social manipulation. This would be directly part of social media companies, and they're all doing it already. It's just going to get better. So social manipulation is, I remember one time, Nicole Sauce was complaining that she just kept seeing people microwave coffee on Facebook. And I'm like, you don't like it when people microwave coffee, do you? She's like, no. I'm like, did you tell people you don't like it when they microwave coffee? She said, yeah. I'm like, that's why you keep seeing it now. They knew that would trigger a comment. They want you to do something, anything, react. Because whenever you react, you form associations with other people that they can use, and you create more data for them to discern who you are. The tools that were – this was a while ago, Nicole and I had this conversation. I'm way pre-COVID. And it had to do with our friend John Dowie, who likes to microwave coffee just to upset Nicole. So basically what I'm saying is just think of how people treat each other. And sometimes it's not even really meanness. Like Dowie and I, we throw shit at each other all the time, but we love each other like brothers. But once you know something will get the reaction, then you keep going back to it. Sometimes you forget about it for a few months or even a year, but you always have it in your back pocket, right? Like if I throw this word out or this thing out, it's going to trigger a response. Well, that's how you manipulate people on social media. You figure out what their hot buttons are and what does button A lead them to do next? And what does button B lead them to do next? And what does button C lead them to do next? And figuring this all out at an individual level is something you can't really do if people are making the decisions. There's only so much you can do like that because this is an on-the-fly decision-making thing. If this, then that. And if that, then this, right? But when you can take AI and you basically form – because I always talk about the algorithm, but what drives the algorithm is a level of intelligence. Now add true intelligence to it, where you can literally have AI looking at people down to that grand individual level and saying, I need, this would be an example, I need about 1,000 people today to start discussing this one thing to create the chain reaction that I'm looking for. So the first command to the AI would be, find me 5,000 good prospects. Just like I went to my guy Tim when I worked for Sage and said, find me the 50,000 best people to email about this thing. Except it's much quicker, right? Because it took Tim like 3 weeks to do that for me. AI can probably do that with all the data these companies have in moments. Okay, we found them. Okay, what do they need to see to get them into this discussion so that when we put this thing that we really want them to talk about in front of them, they'll be primed for it? Of those 5,000 people, there might be 80, 100 things that are each two different groups, subsets of them that will lead them in that direction. So you put that in front of them, AI will even figure out how long to wait. How long to wait before I show this other thing after that for this person. And so these two people, let's say Bill and Jeff, it's actually the same thing that will trigger them. We both want to show them this picture with this news story at 8 o'clock in the morning. But Bill, we want to show him the next piece of content at 9 o'clock in the morning. And Jeff, we want to show it to him at 12:30 in the afternoon after lunch. But how do you know they'll be online? Because you already know. You already know their peak activity periods. So which peak activity period do I show item 1? Which peak activity do I show item 2 to get result 3? You don't think they're doing that already? You don't understand how any of this works. But what they're going to be able to do with that is these social media companies. Why do you think Elon Musk spent $50 billion on Twitter? Just because he believes in free speech? I believe in free speech, and we need free speech in a town square. Let me hire somebody straight out of the WEF, that's completely opposed to everything I say I'm for to run my company after I spent $50 billion on it. Or do you think, being a billionaire, he's like, I want to make sure I can sell as much of the shit that I want to sell as possible, and the best way to do that is on one of the most powerful social media platforms in the world, and then build Grok and let my people play with it so they can train it for me so I can use it to manipulate them. Which one do you think is more likely? Right? John Drake says, lawful but awful. There's a lot of that going to happen, including you could tell your AI and make sure you don't break any laws while you're doing this. Here's all the legal code we have that no human being can possibly understand for the Netherlands. I want you to operate in the Netherlands under the law of the Netherlands and not violate it and still get me the result that I'm looking for. And I want you to do that in Germany, and I want you to do that in the United States, and I want you to do that in the United Kingdom, and I want you to do that in Australia. And it will do it. It will do it. We're going to get to that one, Jeff, real soon. Like I said, we're going up here. Every time I go to a new one, it's more likely to be a real problem in a relatively short period of time. So then we're going to have the concept of biased AI systems in of themselves. We already have this. Go ask ChatGPT critical inquiries into prominent Democrats and leftists, and go ask them critical inquiries into people on the right and see what you get. We all know this. We've already seen this. Go ask ChatGPT to make an argument against something that the establishment says is real. Sometimes it'll do it. A lot of times it won't. So we already have that bias built in. But what happens 10 years in when people become reliant on AI and they begin to trust AI? And then you put bias into the system. You can put a 1% bias into the system and have a massive uptick in a certain action on the other end. You just throw just a little pinch of salt and the flavor profile of all this changes is the way to look at this. Meaning that we could decide, because some of this stuff overlaps, the social manipulation, for instance, we want to start moving society toward outcome A. And we don't want it to be obvious, because even stupid people are way smarter than most computers. So we want to do this very incrementally. So we will influence a 1% bias, and we will increase that 1% by 1%, let's say, every month. The outcome after a year of that would not just be that you'd be moving people in the direction you wanted, but people in general would accept that small, slow modification as real. Another way to understand this is when people form these belief systems because they've heard something a bunch of times. The boiling frog, right? Put the frogs in the pot, turn the heat on super low, and slowly increase the temperature 1 degree every 5 minutes so the frogs will sit there and die and never try to get out. Anybody ever hear that? Does anybody believe that? Do you think it's true? It's not true. It's 100% false. There's no truth in that at all. There is no truth in it. There is no truth in it. Fucking reptiles and amphibians do something called thermoregulation. If you were setting up a terrarium for a frog to live in, you make a warm side and a cool side, and then there's a whole gradient in the middle, and that frog will move wherever it most wants to be at any given time because as an ectothermic creature, it can't provide its own heat or cooling, so it's going to go where it needs to at any individual time. So if you start changing the temperature, it has a sensitivity. In fact, probably more than you do. But you believe it because somebody said it so many times. I one time believed, I got corrected very early on in TSP, that the Polish cavalry charged a battalion of tanks in World War II. They did not. Not the way it was put out in. But I believed it because my history teacher told me. So if you take something like an AI system, and you put a very minor bias toward the outcome you want in it, you will get the outcome. But more, a few years into it, you have people that will die on their sword to defend something that's demonstrably false. And the longer you do it, the more true that will become. Yeah. Of course, Al Gore died, lied in Inconvenient Truth, but I don't know what. Did Al talk about the frog in that movie? I haven't seen it for 25 years. But if he said that, yes, he lied. Yes, he lied. It is a very well-known story and analogy, but it's not true. And I defy anybody to prove otherwise. By the way, Mythbusters already did it without actually harming any frogs. Okay. Next is economic disruption. And this is, of all of them, the one that is most likely to hit us the soonest at a real level. And it is just simply supplanting jobs. And we've talked about it a lot, so I won't go long on it today. But it is a thing, and it's going to become more of a thing. And it's less AI taking everybody's job in this sector. Like, we're not going to have engineers anymore because we have the best engineer in the world in ChatGPT. No, what we have is a tool in AI that enables one engineer to do the job of 10 engineers. Or one engineer and one assistant engineer to do the job of 15 engineers in the past. And we already have that. Same with coding, and it's going to get to more and more things like that. There's so many people, their jobs aren't even really that necessary as it is. Think of, I want anybody here that either now works or at any time in your life worked with for a company with more than 500 employees. And can you not off the top of your head think of like four or five people in that company that if you just walked in and you had stickers, if you stick it on their forehead, they're fired. And you could just walk up to those five people and put stickers on their forehead. And if they left, nothing would really have happened. The company stock price wouldn't have gone down. Your ability to do your job wouldn't have went down. No one would really care. No customers would care, right? You know, Office Space kind of played on this. Remember, what is it, Milton? It wasn't Milton. It was the other guy. Tom, I think his name was. The guy with the jump to conclusions game, right? His big retirement was getting hit by a car so he could make his jump to conclusions game, which was an awful idea, by the way. But he talked to the customers because the engineers can't talk to the customers because the engineers don't know how to talk to people. Why can't the customers just talk to the engineers? How many people like that? How many people like that exist in any large corporation? I think Elon Musk laid off something like 70% of Twitter's employees. Everything still works. Everything still works. Was it? It was Tom, Nick says. Was it Sorkowski? Was that his last name? Something like that. Who is the guy? Somebody look it up for me while we're doing this. So I don't keep fixating on it. But I think it was Tom Sorkowski was the guy's character's name. That, you know, he didn't really have a job. The Bobs end up asking him, what would you say you do here? The reason they put that in that movie is because anybody, especially that time, late 90s, could look around an office and go, there's one. You could still do that. Now imagine when we get to a point where companies start to realize we can't maintain these giant payrolls, which is coming soon. Sumkowski, I was close. Tom L. says it was Tom S. Thanks, Tom. Appreciate you. But yeah, when we get to that point, a lot of those people are going to go. Okay, that's going to be, and it's already started, right? The quietly quitting people are getting permanently quitted is what's happening. Well, once that valve opens up, and those people go and the company still moves forward, when this company then has these engineers that are all making like 200 grand a year apiece, and there's a technology in front of them and their best engineer can take that technology and he can do the work of 10 engineers, that company just went to having two, maybe three engineers, like a spare. We have a spare, like a bench, right? We don't have a shallow bench because we don't need a deep bench anymore. So there's going to be, and that's just one aspect of this. There are going to be so many jobs. They're going to be just fractured in the number of people necessary to do them. I talk a lot about homeschool. This is going to become more and more prevalent. And why would I send my kid to school to learn from a teacher who hates her job when he can stay home and AI plus individuals who record lessons can teach my kid better and faster and more efficiently? The only thing that is keeping public schools anywhere near the size that they are right now, there's two things: propaganda and babysitting. It's those two things only. Propaganda, teachers are heroes that don't wear capes, and they're the greatest thing in sliced bread, and we need them, and we have to have them, and they're wonderful, and the schools are great for your kids, and all this shit. Well, that's beginning to fall apart. But the one that's holding it together is daycare. If parents didn't have to worry where their kids are and what they were doing, and they didn't have to pay somebody to babysit them when they weren't there, I bet you there'd be 50% of the people in the school system would already have their kids out of it. They would already be out of it. And if you can figure out how to really put back in the actual socialization, like being on sports teams and drama clubs and stuff, like that's not that hard to do. If you can crack that nut, then the public education system is just decimated. Like, tomorrow. So that's another vector of attack for economic disruption. The people that are actually the least at risk from this technology short term are low income earners, people that stock shelves. Yeah, I know Amazon has the robots that run around and pick up all the packages and shit and soup, but they have the volume to justify it, right? The Walmart Supercenter, as big as it is, doesn't have the volume to justify stocking shelves with robots yet. Some might, but mostly no. Because the person that does that job is cheap. But the more that person costs, the faster the implementation of the technology to replace them. You understand that? So every time they increase minimum wage, the incentive to go with automation increases, and the more kiosks you see at fast food restaurants. And the more automated fry dunkers you will see, right? Like, I'm not going to replace somebody with expensive computers that I'm not sure about when I have to pay that person $10 an hour plus benefits. But if I have to pay them $25 plus benefits, I'm replacing their ass with technology. Because I already have the problem that people at the bottom end of, like, skill set are the people that are least likely to show up on time and have the most personal problems and all that shit. I'm not putting anybody down that starts there. We all start there unless we're spoiled and handed something. So I don't mean those people, but I mean, like, if you're 25 and you're still doing entry-level work, and I don't mean like your first gig as a programmer out of college or out of tech school. I'm talking like you're asking if they want fries with that and you're 25. You're probably not a top producer and you're probably not going to be. And so you're also probably the person that I as a manager or an owner of a franchise have the most issue making sure you're going to be where you say you're going to be when you're going to be there. You're not calling me because you're in jail or because you're hungover. And so the more you cost me, the more my incentive to move toward technology to do this, right? And then my last one. This is one that should scare the shit out of you. And it should scare you for two reasons. One, because it's possible. But two, because it's possible. How can there be two that are the same thing? Well, when I say possible on the first instance, I mean that technologically it's possible. Two, and the more scary factor is it's possible because society might actually accept it. And it's what I would call AI governance control. Now, there are whole movements of people, generally leftists, that love this idea and have pushed it for a long time, by the way. And that would be like one of the sectors this exists in is something called a resource-based economy, which sounds interesting and sounds really – it's communism. And like all communism, it has a very soft, very – equitable, very beautiful sounding sale that results in misery and suffering on the other side of it. It also uses terminology people are comfortable with because the reality is all economies are resource-based. The current, now not the way they mean it, but the current freaking economy in the United States is a resource-based economy. We buy and sell things as resources based on supply and demand and impacted by inflation. But everything's resource-based. Time is a resource. So me getting you to listen to me, that's a resource-based exchange. When you go buy something made out of wood, the material that made the product is a resource. If it's made out of plastic, the material that made the product is a resource. This is a little tool I built myself. It's made with metal and PEX plastic, right? It is... Well, it's a seed planter, okay, but it is a resource, and I exchanged value that I earned by exchanging other resources in the form of money to buy the pieces to make it myself, and then my labor was a resource. So all economies are resource-based. So that's a little trick they do with a resource-based economy, but what they tell you a resource-based economy is there's only so much stuff, and everybody should have a minimum level for survival, and then, yeah, maybe whatever's left over we can go into a regular economy with. Okay, sure. That's communism. That's equity, right? But those folks want computers to make the decisions because humans can't be trusted. Humans can't be trusted to make the right decision for the most people. I theorize that somebody in the future might actually create a politician that doesn't exist. You'll see wonderful orator speeches and concrete, real plans that actually look like they might work, but the person won't exist. Take somebody with the likability of two characters from two different sides of the aisle that were very well loved in their time, Barack Obama and Ronald Reagan. With the oratory skills of, you know, some real famous British actor or something. And then exactly the look that people trust. And start putting out videos of this person's speeches who doesn't exist to sell the idea. We would be better off. We would be better off if all of these fucking assholes in government, not just the elected officials, bureaucrats too, all of them, They all lie. They all have goals and agendas. I want you to think about this. You are not who you are. You are a stupid-ass 16-year-old kid who will, in 10 years, be a 26-year-old at the prime of your working years and a key decision maker in our society. And you start seeing this shit now. And you, look how much the youth are already predisposed to the message of the left. Just take it to another level. The computers will decide and make sure nobody goes hungry. Nobody goes without medical care. Everybody has enough to get by. And that we make the best decision we can at any given time. And that we correct those decisions quickly. If you don't think you can sell this to people and basically have an AI government, you're crazy. I'm not saying it's going to happen. I'm saying it could happen. And the fact that if you actually go look at the people chanting in the streets right now and you make them this promise, AI will treat everybody equally. AI will really believe you can be a woman even if you're a man. They'll never tell you you're wrong. And we will have free sex changes for everybody that wants them. That's how you sell that demographic. But you can make the same promise to everybody about whatever it is they want. Because most people have what they want, and they don't really, like, they always see it as, I want this, and if it has to come at the expense of the rich, fine. But they don't really want it because the rich have it. They want it because they want it. If you could sell the idea that you can really have everything that you really need, if you tell a person who right now believes I will never own a house, you can own a house. They're very inclined to believe you. People believe what they want to believe. I have to fight it all the time. I will see some ridiculous bullshit said about somebody that I have some respect for, and my immediate thought is, that's bullshit. And when I fact check it, like 98% of the time, I'm right. It's bullshit. I will see it about somebody I don't like, and I always rein myself in, but my initial instinct is to just believe it because I hate this person. But then I just step back and go, self, if you didn't hate this person, knowing what you know about society as a whole, what they do, et cetera, and how this would affect them if it's true, do you think it's true? And I usually go, it's probably not. It's probably not. My wife comes to me all the time. I found this. Look at this thing. And I go, that's probably not true. And she'll look it up. And she's like, son of a bitch. Right? Because when you're alert for it, it's really obvious. But how many people aren't? How many people are still circulating the narratives? Right? Tim Walz drank horse semen. No, he didn't. I think the guy is a total scumbag. But that's not true. But how many people think it is? How many people will listen to this episode will email me and tell me I'm wrong without bothering to check first and find out it was like some other person. It was like an altered article they put his picture in from a totally disassociated thing. So somebody actually did it from my research. It was like a bet or a dare, and they just changed who it was and where it happened. And they used AI to generate an artificial look like an old newspaper article about it. Yeah. Right? And they believe it. Why? Because they want to. We want to believe bad things about people we hate, and we want to believe good things about people we like. And this will be you. And think again, the leverage. You know, if you've ever trained in martial arts with a true master of any art, there are pressure points in certain places where with a very little bit of force, you can make a person do a thing, especially if they've never experienced it before, so they don't know that it's going to happen. Think about a computer that can manipulate you like that with your mental choices, that can individually determine those pressure points down to each person based on the data we have on them already, and do it incrementally, you know, a half a percent or a percent at a time. You don't even know you're being changed because it happens really fast, doesn't it? How many of you know somebody? Young person, like your nephew, your niece, whatever, your kids, perfectly upstanding, common sense thinking individual. Like, they may not agree with you on anything, they're not. Kids are not supposed to agree with adults on everything. If you have that in a kid, something's wrong. But, you know, you would rank them as middle of the road, slightly right, slightly left, one way or the other, but somewhere in that, like, they don't believe bullshit and nonsense. They go to college. By the time they come back for fucking Thanksgiving, their entire programming is completely rewritten. white privilege, the patriarchy, they hate their parents. Like, we've all seen it happen. That's a rapid movement. Now imagine being manipulated by the stuff you trust every day, tiny little increments. Because do you know why? Why that young kid who was a perfectly normal young person comes back a woke idiot in one semester? Because they were already being moved that direction from kindergarten through 12th grade. Because they were primed for it by the existing system. Again, imagine a computer that can do that. And now give that computer the ability to sell the idea that computers should be making the decisions that your government falls flat on. Who here hates their government? Everybody's hand goes up. How would you like a solution to that? Everybody's hands go up. If I tell you the solution is, I'm going to give you a computer to do it for you right now, you're going to say, no. But if I set an agenda to get this done over 10 or 15 years, what percentage of the population do I have to make think it's a good idea? And who would want that? Well, all of these politicians and all wouldn't want it. Well, whoever was in charge of the machines themselves would want that. They would want that. And it would probably start out with the United States Congress is now going to be using AI to ascertain situations to help them with their decision making. That's how you always do it. You convince the enemy that your inside man is their ally. He's there to help them. Right? You might even have a person that looks like they are your spy who you get inside and they say, I don't really want to help them anymore. I want to help you. Your double agent scenario. Now think about agents that can spawn agents that can spawn agent, because that's what I want to finish with. All of these things, these 11 things I covered today, each one of them can be done by a particular AI personality or agent. But we now have the ability to take AI and have it spin up other AIs. We already have that. So you could literally have an AI look at something that it wanted to manipulate and determine it needs to be manipulated in a certain way and spin up an agent and then go do something else while that new agent actually influenced that one thing. Including combining things like computer viruses. And I don't see any reason why you couldn't run a rudimentary AI on any computer, especially the newer computers, as powerful as they are, that would be installed like a virus on your computer and individually making decisions about you from your own local device, but then transmitting that data alongside the data you're willingly transmitted back to the mothership that's making the next sophisticated decision and telling that one what to do next to find out the next piece of information, even when you're not on the internet or traveling or carrying your phone around. Scary shit, isn't it? Scary shit, isn't it? When you really think about this, to me, this is way more scary than the idea that we're going to all end up in a slime pod in the Matrix. Right? You want to know those movies? They're all actually telling you about this. They're all actually talking about the real technology as analogies, because you wouldn't watch a movie about that. I had an epiphany. I think somebody meant it as a joke, but it wasn't a joke. It was real. Remember in the first Matrix, when Morpheus takes Neo to meet, what's her name, the prophet lady, the one that looks at him and tells him whether he is or is not the one. I can't remember her name. Okay. The Oracle. Right? So they take to the Oracle. What does the Oracle give Neo before he can find out his answer? What does she give him? Anybody remember? What does the Oracle give to Neo before she has a conversation with him? And she says, after you have it, you'll feel better. What does he get? Everybody's saying the Oracle, so I must be behind. A cookie. Correct. Tom was first, so we'll put him on screen. She gives him a cookie. The movie came out in, like, I want to say 96 or 98. The cookie, as in a browser cookie, was invented about 4 years before the movie. What's a cookie do? Tracks you inside a computer program. Even the one had to receive a cookie before it could be told what to do next. If you want the information off the website, you have to accept the tracking cookie. And we call that, folks, in a movie, a breadcrumb. All these movies are doing, all these stories are doing, and not always 100% accurately, obviously, but actually looking at possible futures and then telling and weaving a narrative around them that goes to the extreme, because that's what people want to see. That's why more people will turn in for a show on the top 10 real dangers of AI. And tomorrow when I talk about something like aquaculture or gardening, there'll be half the number of people in a live stream and half the number of audio downloads that day. Because people like this kind of storyline. But the mundane and the common are where the real dangers lie. We are going to have computers manipulating human beings to do things, and those humans will not even know they're being manipulated, which is why it will work. Including the people that you think are on your side, who think they're on your side, and who are on your side. Anyway, let's take a few questions real quick, and then we'll wrap up. Jeff says, AI will take over most jobs. Where do all of those people get their income? Well, universal basic income, of course, and the computers will decide how much you get. You think I'm kidding? I'm not. If you're waiting for something else, no, that's exactly what's going to happen. There will be some form of UBI implemented over the next 15, 20 years. There really will be. And it will be the greatest, and it will probably work. Now, did fractional reserve banking work? Right? It's inherently flawed. It's a terribly designed, but it worked. It worked, and in full on fractional reserve. Zero commodity reserve. Like, we had this hybrid from like 1913, and then it got magnified in 33 up to 1971. We had fractional reserve, but we had an underlying commodity reserve in gold that put a chain on what fractional reserve could do. But if you think a bank that gave a more, so right now everybody prints money, but even before the gold went away, the banks were still issuing mortgages and loans based on a promise to repay and printing money that didn't exist. That was already going on. In 71, that got supercharged. But it still works today. So it only has to work for long enough to get the actual objective accomplished. As far as you're, when you say works and you get like, no, it doesn't, you're thinking from a standpoint, is this a good idea for humanity and will it work forever? The people behind it are like, will it get me what I want when I want it before it stops functioning? Fractional reserve works. So when I say UBI will work, I don't mean it will be here forever and it will work really well. When I say it works, I don't even mean it'll work good. Every government that's ever existed works for somebody. Communism works for the elite inside the communist state really, really well, right? Fascism works really well for the people close to the government and close to the tops of industry in a fascist economy, like the one you live in. Yes, I know. We don't have gas chambers and concentration camps, but that's not what fascist economics are. That's Nazism. Fascist economics, well, we won't talk about that today because we've done it enough. All of the systems work. Just because it doesn't work for you doesn't mean it doesn't work. So I think they will implement a UBI, and it will work well enough to get what they want done, which is to get everybody on it so you have the ultimate leverage over everybody. We'll shut it off. You'll have nothing. First generation of people on it, maybe we'll tell them to go get fucked, because they had to live without it. But imagine once you have a single generation grown into adulthood who has never known a time where it didn't exist. You threaten to take it away. What could you get out of young people today? Let alone old fuckers like me, but out of young people today, if you said, if you don't do this, we'll turn off your ability to access the internet. You'd have a leverage point on me because I run a business on it. If I didn't run my business on the internet, I wouldn't give a fuck if you turned off my access to the internet. But a 20-year-old, your life is over if you turn off the internet. Now imagine it's your income. You had a guaranteed income, $2,500 a month for the rest of your life. But if you say the wrong thing, your credit score goes too low, we'll turn it off. That's what they're going to do because it benefits them to do it more than it benefits you. They will tell you it benefits you. It will feel like it benefits you, but it won't. The new old man says, where to start learning to use AI? How to introduce it to kids? Go to ChatGPT and play with it. It's that simple. Go use the free one and play with it and start learning about it. Look up YouTube videos on how to use it. Look up YouTube videos for commands. Like, the most important thing about using AI right now to get what you want out of it is know how to manipulate it. Know how, when you get an answer that's not what you were looking for, to change your phraseology so that you do. And if you're going to use it, what I recommend is keep a little note file or a Word file or something like that. And when you come up with a command that works really well, cut and paste it into that file so that when you want to use it again, you can do so. So, for instance, I may ask it to write something for me, and I might also tell it, and don't tell me here it is. Don't do, you know, don't do anything except raw text. Yeah. And I might want it to actually highlight certain things in another one, and so I'll have another set of commands for that. It's kind of like programming, but the programming language is English. That's the best way to think about it. So, like, when people talk about learning to program a computer, what you're really learning how to do is speak another language, whether it's SQL or BASIC or, you know, Ruby on Rails or PHP or ColdFusion or, you know, I'm dating myself when I use things like ColdFusion and PHP, but, you know, everybody does PHP. Every programmer that's self-taught probably starts with PHP. It's what runs WordPress. They're just languages. And once you speak the language, you know how to tell the computer what to do. What AI really is the ability for you to talk to the computer and ask the computer to do something, including write code in one of these languages, but you use English. It's really a massive translation service is what it mostly is right now. But just go play with it. Don't be afraid of it. Don't be afraid of it at all. You know, play with it, the free version, and then maybe buy the premium version and play with it a while. If it doesn't really help you much, just do it enough to learn from it and then do something else. K-Bong says, why don't we have robotic coal miners? I'm pretty sure we do. I'm pretty sure we do. Most of the coal mined anymore is actually mined from pit mining, and we have completely autonomous heavy equipment now. So I think we're pretty much paying guys to sit in the machine while it works. I got one more here from Ernie. What do you think about advantages of having AI-controlled aquaponic system, fish feeder, pH? See, that's more automation than AI. Right now, the way you would set that up, you would use something like Raspberry Pi or Arduinos or something, and you would some timers, and you would make all the decisions, right? But we have, like, I guess I'd call it proto-AI systems now, especially in not so much aquaponics, because there's a little more art than just science with aquaponics, but with hydroponics, like, we have equipment that will immediately change pH and nutrient levels and make decisions like drain half the fluid and pull from here, replace it, and then rebalance it. Like, that already exists in hydro, but it's still really automation, right? And what I mean versus AI in that it still requires you to make the decisions of what you want. True AI would literally be like, it would split the system in two and be doing split testing and making its own decisions. So we increase the calcium by X here and Y there, and X works better. So now I'm going to just flip it to make sure it's not something to do with the lighting or something. And when the result is consistent, that becomes the new paradigm. We're not there yet with that tech, but we will be. And that's why I'm not for throwing the baby out with the bathwater here. For all of the evil shit that I talked about today, right, there's all these wonderful things we can do. And that kind of hits what Scott here asking me now. How can we use AI to combat the coming AI takeover of jobs and society so we have more freedom? If you need to develop your AI skills so that as we get into more of being able to run our own AI tools on our own machines locally, you have AI that makes you independent from others. One of the reasons I reached out to Guy Swan, we're going to have internet that is us, not them. Seriously, you're going to be able to take your phone, scan some shit on your computer using a technology called Pear, and communicate with only the people you want to communicate and shut the rest of these motherfuckers out. And without giving up the ability to partake in the advantages that having these thinking machines give you. That's going to happen in time. I want to say real quick here before we wrap up, Potenponics, Steven Reisner's in the house. He says, automation in aquaponics is great for advisory, but not good to run the system as it can automate problems into disasters. And that's what I said. Aquaponics has, so with hydro, you have plants, okay? Just plants. And if I put in too much of a chemical for the plant starts to yellow. I can make the correction. Maybe I lose some lettuce. If I fuck up the balance and kill all the fish or half the fish, the toxicity released by killing the fish kills, like, it's this cascading comedy of errors that can come out of it. By the way, Steven is one of the most brilliant people I've ever met. I reached out to him about speaking at the workshop this year. He can't do it. But he mentioned an idea that I'm going to get back to him on later today or tomorrow that I've been kicking around, and that is having about, you know, like I do the first Tuesday coffee chat with John and Nicole. I'm thinking about doing that every week with some person or group of people. And Stephen had kind of inquired about doing that, like me, him, Matt Powers, and Nick Ferguson. I don't know if I want to do four people for something like that, but that might become a thing. And like every week has like its own like Just Jack show, but it also has some other things in it as well. So we'll see about that going forward in the future. But I'm going to wrap up there. I want to tell you guys something, though, at the end of today's show that has nothing to do with AI. It has to do with my product reviews and a concern that I have begun to develop with Vavor. I've always known that there's a bit of a gamble buying from Vavor. They make some really great products, and they make some garbage products, and they make some stuff in between. And they do not have the greatest customer service. I've never said otherwise. If you go to my write-up from a couple weeks ago on my electric sausage maker that they sent me, you will see a disclaimer right now that says, mine broke. They can't tell me how to fix it. I can't demand a new one because I didn't pay for it. And I don't necessarily recommend this product right now. And I have got to figure out what to do going forward with Vavor. Part of me was like, screw it. I don't need the money. I just should not even work with them. And then my other part of it is, but I have tons of equipment from them that works really great. And sometimes you just get bad shit. On the sausage maker in particular, I ended up doing a deep dive into sausage makers. And I was like, I need to make a shitload of sausage. So the fact that, and if you go look up the write-up on it, you can actually see a video of it not working. So I said, like, I got to buy something, like, better than what I have so I can move faster. And I ended up actually, so that I wouldn't owe them anything, buying another product from Vavor. Now, why would you do that? Well, because when I looked into sausage makers, they're literally all made the same. They're all the same format. I'm talking Lem, Weston, Cabela's, Vavor, Hockaroo, Happy, whatever the hell it's called. Like, they're all the freaking same. Like, you literally look at them and they're built, they're the same parts. And every brand has a shitload of happy people and a group of people who are like, this is junk and it broke and here's what happened. And they're all the same. So I considered the gearing in electric one, and I bought one of their large manual ones, and we used it this weekend. It worked perfectly. I'm not going to recommend it until I use it a couple more times, because the electric one, I used it once and it worked flawlessly, and the second time it failed. Second use. It's a $500 product. I can't recommend you buy it when that happened to me and I don't get a good answer from them about what went wrong. And I have no idea what went wrong. I'm thinking about giving it to anybody that wants it, that thinks they can fix it, that's either local or comes to a workshop or something like that. I don't know what I'm going to do yet, because I pulled the cover off and looked inside. I'm like, I don't even know what to begin to do with it. But it's just, it skips, and it won't actually force out. But if I try to stop it with my hands, it'll break my arm. So I don't know what's going on there. But I just want to say, going for a Vavor, I'm going to do what I was already doing, and that is deeply evaluating the Amazon reviews on any individual product and other reviews and other, like, you know, influencers make on it before I even either buy it or request it, and then testing it. But what I'm going to start doing, if I get something and it works, great. And it might piss off my rep, but it's going to work for like a month before I review it. And so that's the best that I can do in this situation. With that, I'm going to wrap up. I do have an item of the day today. If you want to see it, go to thesurvivalpodcast.com and scroll down. I've spent enough time with you guys today. I need to let you go. Appreciate you tuning in today. Take care. I'm going to do the best I can always for you with product recommendations. I don't want to throw babies out with bathwaters, but I also want to be honest about what's going on. So With that, take care, and I'll catch you tomorrow with another episode. Also, a Just Jack episode.
Are they gonna bail you out or just run you around? They said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.